where's our recommendation at?
I didn't write one, but Pat did.
Where's that at?
On April 1st, Pat made his notice of probable violation, and attached to that is a summary and a proposed penalty.
All right, let's get started with the work session. I know there are a number of people listening in, so we want to make sure you're all on the right link here. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting to discuss case number GS08765, which is the NSP gas safety inspection in Fargo as a result of the home explosion. Ms. Kevin Kramer, along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk, and our advisor, Annette Bendish, legal counsel, others in the room are interested parties, advocates, and company officials. We know there are a number of people on the phone as well. So with that, we'll open the work session. This is a work session, which means that this is an opportunity for the commissioners to discuss among themselves and with their advisor the case to this point and what give any direction as to how we might proceed with the recommendation from staff. So that, welcome, good morning, and I turn it over for any opening comments to Commissioner Clark first, and then Commissioner Kalk, who carries the portfolio.
Good morning, welcome.
And Brian.
No, same thing, good morning and welcome, and I guess the biggest thing, I guess, going into this is that we had Al is on staff for a while, and Al has since moved along, but I did talk to Al quite a bit before I left, and I know there's been some discussion back and forth. Maybe just to have Annette kind of walk through where we're at with the, we send something, they send something back. Where we're at with that.
Well, there's, yeah, right.
Well, on April 1st, Pat filed or sent to Fargo
the notice, right?
His notice of probable violations and a proposed compliance order, which is kind of what I thought we would refer from today because, of course, I'm legal counsel and not a technical expert and really haven't prepared anything beyond that. XL on June 28th filed their last comments and additional response, and prior to that, on May 7th, they had filed a response. All of that information is in the docket, but I think probably the logical starting point for us today is to look at what advocacy staff has prepared and go through each of those violations and discuss as part of the probable violations for each one. There's a proposed civil penalty and a proposed compliance order.
Well, the NOPV, issues all were all, the NOPV was based all on response, not on the incident itself, right?
Right, and XL has responded.
And they have responded, yes. Not once, but twice.
Right.
Including, including making some of the improvements. In fact, their reply from a couple of days ago was an attempt, I believe, to further comply with.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, your point is significant that the notice of probable violation was after the fact of the accident per se took place. It was in the response of it that there was some violation. So that, I think that's a big point to point out. Because that's drawing a conclusion on the other side, perhaps, that
right. Everything...
Not that nothing foreseeably that went wrong.
One of the specific things that has interested me all along on the NOPV and the response is that one of the remedies that the company has taken is replacing all the Century Pipe, and I've never seen a conclusion that this was a result of a flaw in Century Pipe. Or am I wrong?
Correct. No, you're right. In fact, even one of their responses, the most recent one,
yeah,
June 29th, says that.
It says that,
and
right.
That it doesn't appear to have anything to do with the Century Pipe itself. Not that it's not a good idea to replace it.
Right,
I think
right.
Given past incidents in Minnesota and I believe Iowa, It's probably something that should have been done some time ago. But, and, you know, to the degree that this brought to light the century pipe issue, I'm pleased that they're replacing it. But it didn't appear that that was the cause of this particular explosion. It was something else. It appears our staff is inclined to believe it has to do with how it may have been installed. XL indicates that they believe it had to do with a single sudden event, undefined. But yeah, I mean, it's more of a paperwork violation, right? And
right.
Well, yeah, exactly. The did not perform failure to investigation of the incident, number one, and then XL's response, if you will.
I'm curious what my fellow commissioners think about the response to the issues raised with regard to the paperwork violation itself.
Yeah.
Because that's really the
it's really the
crux of it. Or if there are any staff comments on that particular response. I mean, as I read it, XL's response is basically, well, we've tightened some things up, but I mean, was there a specific point-by-point refutation of?
I don't think so. I mean, my sense was that there's, while there's not a flat-out admission, there's a implied that, you know.
They say, we don't think we're in violation, but we've tightened some things up.
But we're doing better. Yeah.
Right.
In response.
You're saying we should ask them to do certain things and they need to respond to those certain tasks?
Well, the NOPV, you know, the allegation of the NOPV was that they didn't follow the procedures and in their own
written explanation.
Their own investigation. I mean, my understanding is that our staff is saying that they didn't do a third party investigation. They're saying that the lab test of the riser that everybody participated in is that adequate. That was the adequate. That meets their requirements in third party,
right?
Or an external, I guess, is the word.
Yeah, I mean the three violations are neatly summarized in the. The evidence provided to staff indicates XL did not prepare and keep a record of its analysis of the accident and failure for the purpose of determining the cause of the failure and minimizing possible recurrence. And then number two is the evidence provided to staff indicates XL did not prepare and keep record of its employee activities, review, and determinations. And number three is the evidence provided to staff indicates XL did not prepare and keep a record of its gas emergency plan review and determinations. The century pipe.
Yeah.
It's a separate matter where they're being followed up on, but
yeah.
Separate from the NOPV.
Well, and then our action, you know, it would be helpful. I know that's part of the problem about staff changing over the technical experts, but, you know, typically we have realm of things at our disposal. Require the operator to do compliance actions, impose civil penalties, suspend operation of the pipeline system. Those are things we have to decide, and the civil penalties that go through. But typically at this point, we'd have a recommendation of what our technical expert combined with our legal folks would have, and then we could be talking about that specifically.
Yeah, although we do in the sense that we have you know, we have Pat's recommendation, the NOPV itself. What we don't have is an advisor, a technical advisor anymore that could say.
Because I guess, quite honestly, Pat's recommendation made sense. It seems probably a very appropriate response, if you will. But I guess, what would you think about that? And I'm sure you had a chance to go through that, too. Well, I mean, looking through what Pat had put together, I mean, do you find that reasonable and appropriate?
I guess from a legal perspective, I do.
But that's back to the technical side, right?
That's our problem.
Do we want to take these one by one? Is that the
yeah? Why don't we? I think so. I think that's exactly what we ought to do.
Violation number one. Violation number two.
Let's do that. Let's take it. Violation number one, of course.
I mean, today are we? Is the goal today to determine if we need more information? Is it to determine that we're ready to go forward with a decision on the NOPV?
I think it is, if we can come to that conclusion. I mean, if we feel comfortable after discussing each of the violations and the evidence. So probable violation number one is basically that XL did not prepare and keep a record of its analysis of the accident and failure for the purpose of determining the causes of the failure and minimizing the possibility of recurrence.
XL's response is that they did, in fact, perform an investigation, done the CRT and FEC testing that they acceded to effectively takes the place of other analysis that they might have done due to the destructive testing and forensic lab analysis that's required.
See, it's a little bit clumsy without a hearing.
Well, and that's the point about the, I mean, typically, when we'll do this, we'll have folks, the technical experts, have had a good chance to go through all this. We can ask some technical questions compared to what information we have, but we're missing that cog right now. I mean, so we can look at this and say, okay, I agree, but
short of us reading every note from the investigators, for example, we know very little based on all this stuff about the scene itself.
All we're getting is a recommendation that there was no violation. Is about what it comes down to. The violations were in these areas, so it implies that everything else was quote unquote fine.
Right.
So in the order that would go out, what would the order look like? I've never seen an order that would potentially go out on something like this.
I haven't either.
There's a proposed order right here, but language
that's
at least.
That's a proposed compliance order.
No, compliance order.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Yeah, that's not the NOPV.
That's not the.
Because NSP has already provided those responses that were due by NSP.
Right.
Right.
So, and they've already paid for the testing.
Right.
Because I guess that's kind of where there's the proposed compliance order from one group, if you will. But, you know, like just take wintering, for example. We'll go through and we'll have something that will recommend this, and we'll go back and, because we have to say something in the order that, you know, the accident occurred in this state and we find no violations in this particular part of it. However, later on we find violations in this part of it. Do we have to say that, or should we say that there was no violations? It took, you know, the accident took place at this time. So do we need to walk through and say, accident took place at this time, for thorough review of information we deemed there was no violations occurred until this point in time? That's what I would see an order flowing out.
I would think we would need to. I mean, I'm kind of in a very awkward position. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for me to not have support from the division on the technical
side
of this.
So then what is at our disposal at this point in time? As far as, because that's what I think we should have, our own proposed order from our technical expert and our legal person, given the information that is provided, as well as the information that they bring into the table. And then we sit down and we talk about that. Because what we're trying to do now is piece together a decision based on a bunch of little information.
Well, I mean, there is some factual information that I'd like to have mm-hmm. from staff. And it's not technical, I don't think. And when you're talking specifically mm-hmm. about this first violation.
Right.
It's, for example, some of it is just timing questions about when certain things were requested and when certain things were provided. The crux of the disagreement, it looks like to me, on the first violation, is that staff is saying, XL, right away you should have done an investigation, some sort of initial investigation. You have to have procedures on file that talk about how you're going to look at this. In October, explosion happened September 2nd, October 1, staff requested that XL file that information. XL's response is that in the fall of 2008, while we were looking into this, there was litigation pending, and commission staff, you know, directed that basically this be, you know, tested at a private lab and so on and so forth.
Yeah, the delay in the testing at the lab, I can...
Right,
that
there was delay. So the question is, I mean, XL's responding vaguely in the fall of 2008, all this litigation was going on and everything else. And my question is, there must have been something done between September 1 and October 1. And staff is indicating that, you know, they didn't get what they had requested on October 1. And so it's really a question of kind of timing. You know, would they have been able to do anything in that month? What should have been provided? I can kind of get if there's going to be private testing done and it's going to destroy the,
right,
you know, the pipe and there's pending litigation, it has to be done right. I mean, there can be explanations for it, but at the same time, I mean, I'd need to know how involved staff was up to that point and what information XL should have available for staff as of that October 1 request date, and how much was just kind of, you know, a company's decision to maybe limit what they should have been doing because there was pending litigation they didn't want to expose themselves to outstanding liabilities. So, I don't know, can we get that information outside of a hearing or not?
If we have a formal hearing, we'd almost have to, almost certainly call Al, maybe Kevin.
Mm-hmm. See, because there's a question that I have. Okay, I understand there's these proposed right here. But maybe our advisor, if Al was sitting right there, would think, you know, there should have been a violation in the front end. I don't know that. Because we're, right, you know, and so we have lost our technical person through that, and this by saying this means there's no other violations anywhere else. Where if somebody else with the technical background looked through all the information, they could say that maybe there's five violations that took place.
Well, because Kevin was the one that was there on the scene in the beginning,
right?
Or he could give strong thoughts that no, this is good.
Well, see, I mean, here's for example some of the timing questions. Okay, October 1, commission staff requested XL provide a copy of its report analyzing the September 2nd incident, determining cause of failure and action for minimizing possible recurrence. In November 13th, XL responds that the report of the CRT labs was provided to the NDPSC on May 26th, 2009, and a copy of the initial U.S. DOT incident report was provided to the PSC on October 2nd, so right after that. Mm-hmm. Or no, on October 2nd. XL NSP does not have October 2nd, 2008, is that correct?
Copy of the initial DOT.
That's one thing. September 2nd, 2008 was the incident, and then the date listed here are 2009, so a year later.
Right. So XL Energy does not have any other reports. XL responds that the steps in the testing process were somewhat different than our previous experience, partly because commission staff took the initiative to select and direct the laboratory. I just need to understand the timing of when the commission staff was involved, you know, taking the initiative to select and direct different
laboratories. Well, from the contact perspective, I remember Al Mock finding the lab, working with me to do the procurement, arrange for the testing, and Gloria at the time. And I recall that taking Al some time to find.
Oh, I recall all of that. I also recall the lab's schedule being difficult. I recall other witnesses
delaying dates because somebody couldn't be there to watch it.
Right.
And it was a big time coordination to get that done.
But I understand what the violation is that. All that aside, mm-hmm. XL should have been doing some more investigating and should have, that there was nothing, in, you know, apart from that being done that probably should have been being done.
Right, so I need to know how all of those things going on made what XL did somewhat different, you know, than previous experience and how it all fits together from a timeline.
So there's an informal, it would be an informal be adequate to do that?
I don't know that it is either.
I mean, I doubt that
anything,
it is.
I think it would be a first step, but I think you're going to have that informal, and then you're still going to want to go.
Well, then there'd be no point.
But if we had to keep beating this horse, the technical person that lived all this, they could probably answer all these questions for us as we're sitting here, because they lived it. You know, do we go back and get Al back on the payroll for 2 weeks to? To talk about it?
Yeah, I'm not against doing that. I'm just not sure that
okay.
Would be. Yeah, I mean, I think we absolutely can do that.
Yeah,
I don't think that's.
Subpoena him, yeah.
Yeah, we could subpoena him and.
Just have him come in for a couple hours.
I'm not opposed to compensating him for it if it's necessary, but. But my only concern about it is the context in which we do that. Do we do that as just sort of an informal discussion with him to give us some advice, or do we. I don't think so either. I think you have to put them under oath.
I think it needs to be an actual, on the record.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, contested discussion because you took a position in it. You know, it's more than just.
From my point of view, scheduling a formal hearing creates a whole other level of a timing issue. Because
yeah, no kidding.
You're going to lose advisory council as well.
Yeah,
but Al was our advisor, so why is that? I mean, that's appropriate. I guess for me personally, one of two things has to happen. Either we do this again in some period of time, and then each one of us have to go back through and review all the technical stuff, because I'm still not comfortable that there was not more violations that took place. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. So.
Well, I'm relatively certain Al wouldn't say, Al's position wouldn't. Has Al, did Al ever say before he left that he thought there were more violations?
He was waiting to see. He was waiting to see this, so then he could comment without biasing it. And maybe he'll say, and maybe that won't be the case. But it's, we're kind of
blind though.
Yeah, exactly. Or we take this is good, and then we. You know, like we were kind of doing, going down the three different points.
If the parties all agreed 100%, that, you know.
But we're not
then
there.
We could get an advisor. Then we
get
an Al could advise us, and then we'd be fine. Our challenge, though, is.
Because that's where the two groups, I mean, how far apart are they? I guess they're quite a ways apart.
Yeah.
violation versus not a violation is a pretty... All right. Is there any point in trying to tackle violation number two?
I don't know. I think we're going to...
I don't think there is.
I think we need
to. Then we better bring an attorney general up to speed.
Yep.
Right? Or some other arrangement.
Or some other arrangement.
Yeah.
Which is also a possibility.
Okay. Yeah.
Which may be simpler.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm all for it. Believe me.
Just could you walk me through some of the protocol questions, though, is it why would we have scheduled this work session instead of just not having a hearing?
Oh, I think because we needed to,
maybe
in reading the complaint and the responses, we were comfortable saying, okay, this is clearly a violation or this is clearly not, and we're ready to rule right now. And from what I'm hearing is that's not the case. And there's just too many factual things we need to get answers about that,
okay.
You know,
that
we don't have in a seven-page filing.
And we said we've all looked through it differently, but we couldn't talk about it until we got in here and said we...
There's that, and keep in mind that the most recent response was 2 days ago.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So you've got, yeah. I mean, so the work session's been instructive in that now we know what we have to do.
The bottom line is this is a technical enough area,
mm-hmm.
and both in terms of law and, like, the facts, that it's just too tough for me to make a decision based on a paper record. I just have too many questions that I need to ask of expert witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and to be fair to the company and to staff, I just feel like I need to, I don't know if others feel the same way.
No, that's exactly the point of asking someone who could answer a lot of these questions that we're having, and maybe that's the format of the whole hearing.
All right, so Annette, you'll contact Al, check his schedule.
So then that hearing will be right here?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And if in Al was advisory to us on this. I mean, if we need to bring him on a contract basis, I know
he's not against.
He's indicated, look, if you need to, you know, me to do a little cleanup work on something, he would be happy to do that.
I mean, he's in town, he's available.
He's in town, and whether we feel like we need him just as a, you know, for an afternoon testifying, or whether it's a little more structured than that.
Well,
we
there
can
may
figure
be a follow-up
out.
Work session after the hearing that we need.
Right. Yeah. I think we.
So when the hearing takes place, what, you know, like when we do go back to the wind thing, there'll be a hearing that'll say they're going to build this. Here's the law that says they follow. What's the setup for this hearing? Which law do we use to preface it? And go back to there's this law that says we're supposed to do something and there's potentially a violation of the law. That's
the sort of general administrative practices, isn't
right,
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it would be staff presenting a case. They'd be the
advocacy staff.
Advocacy staff would be the, I don't know, petitioner, is that the right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's, you know, sort of acting in that role. The company effectively defending itself, and
so
then the commission, you know, hearing it and asking questions.
Is there also a potential that, given where we're headed with this, that the two members, the Pats and the XLs of the world, go back together and say, you know, they could work this out to something agreeable before it comes to the hearing?
They could have a settlement.
They could have it, and I've been thinking that too. But
because I just... That's just something. I just want to walk through that process here.
Absolutely.
It's a little bit difficult for me to imagine a settlement that's anything other than...
Well, they're so far apart.
Well, yeah, I mean, the settlement would almost have to be... I don't see advocates saying, you were right, you didn't violate the law. So that means there would have to be an admission on the other side that's different. But anyway, whatever, it's all everything's
okay.
Possible. We won't hear the case today. But Annette will contact Al, check on some scheduling, and go from there, bring it for perhaps discussion at the next admin and maybe scheduling.
Will do.
All right, very good.
Okay.
We'll close the work session. Thanks,
Thank
everybody.
You.
And now we have a
director's
slash budget meeting.